Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Billboard.com Pop Shop Podcast. My name is Keith Caulfield, and I am the co-director of charts at Billboard. And joining me, as always, is Billboard's deputy editor, digital, Katie Atkinson. Hi, Katie.
Hey, Keith.
How's it going?
It's going great. It's, I'm not sure if you knew this, it's Tony's week.
Tony.
That's a different thing. Tony.
Tony, right. Feels good.
Right.
Knowing that the Tony Awards are this Sunday, it feels good. The Tony Awards are this Sunday, and we'll be actually talking about the Tony Awards later on the show, because as always, the Billboard Pop Shop Podcast is your one-stop shop for all things pop on Billboard's weekly charts. In addition, you can always count on a lively discussion about the latest pop news, fun chart stats and stories, new music, and guest interviews with music stars and folks from the world of pop.
Today on the show, we've got news about Shawn Mendes, Kanye West, Selena Gomez, and how Billboard is celebrating Pride Month.
Ooh la la. Plus, we'll be... I don't know why that's an ooh la la for Pride Month. Sorry, folks. I don't know. I'm personally excited about it. Plus, we'll be joined by Billboard senior editor and host of Billboard on Broadway podcast, prepositions would be good there, isn't it? Right? The is a preposition?
It's a definite article.
Shoot. Definite articles are good to have into intros there. Rebecca Milzoff to talk all things Tony Awards. We'll be talking about what to watch out for on the show and who might walk away with some of the big prizes of the night.
But first, before we get started, if you enjoy the podcast, subscribe to the show on iTunes or your favorite podcast provider so you won't miss an episode. And if you want to explore more podcasts from Billboard, like, say, the Billboard on Broadway podcast, for instance, visit billboard.com/podcasts.
Yeah, the Billboard on Broadway podcast. This is what happens when
Billboard
I'm
on the Broadway.
Like
Broadway.
I'm just plowing through the script a little bit too quickly, and I just drop out words that are really important to have there. Well, let's hit some of the biggest chart news this week, according to me. First up, it's all about Shawn Mendes at the top of the Billboard 200 albums chart. As the pop singer-songwriter debuts atop the list with his new self-titled third full-length studio album. The set bows with 182,000 equivalent album units earned, of which 142,000 were in traditional album sales. And those numbers are both in the week ending May 31st, according to Nielsen Music. By the way, both of those sums represent career high weeks for Shawn. So good for Shawn. By the way, Shawn's first week was boosted by a concert ticket album sale redemption offer, as was his last album, Illuminate. So, you know, this is kind of par for the course. It's what everyone does. Notably, Shawn gets his third number one at the ripe old age of just 19 years and 10 months old, making him the third youngest act to achieve that particular feat, meaning only two other acts got their third number one at younger ages. And those acts were...
I'm going to say, I hope the listeners are mentally guessing right now.
Can you guess? You can probably guess. Justin Bieber and Miley Cyrus.
Yes.
They were the only two that were younger when they got their third number ones. Justin was 17 and Miley was 15. Just 15.
Those Hannah Montana days.
Oh, those crazy days. Actually, she was... Her third number one was Breakout.
Mm.
And then the second one was the Hannah Montana 2/Meet Miley Cyrus.
Yes.
And then the first one was the first Hannah Montana thing, which we give her credit for because she is Hannah Montana.
And she,
she sang the whole thing. Anyway, Next, over on the Billboard Hot 100 chart, as Sean's In My Blood hits a new high, it rises 20 to 11. Drake's Nice For What holds at number one for a sixth non-consecutive week. Further down the list, Selena Gomez, friend of the podcast, Selena Gomez.
Sean, too.
And Sean, too. Not Drake yet, though.
Not yet. Oh, my goodness. Let's get Drake on the pop show.
Can you imagine?
I would love it.
That would be crazy. Well, Selena Gomez gets her 20th top 40 hit as Back to You from the 13 Reasons Why Season 2 soundtrack jumps 46 to 38. Incredibly, that's Gomez's 15th consecutive top 40 hit, stretching back to 2012's Love You Like a Love Song, which was credited to Selena Gomez and The Scene, by the way.
Consecutive, a.k.a. every single song she's released since 2012
every
has hit the top 40?
Every single song that she's charted on the Hot 100 with that's has gone top 40.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's serious.
Yeah, I mean,
the last 6 years.
I mean, maybe there's been something that she released that just didn't make the chart,
sure.
But that seems highly
it
improbable.
Does. Yeah. That's wild.
Yeah, exactly. And
speaking of wild,
and
so unintentional.
That was not even scripted. Seriously, it wasn't.
It wasn't.
And here's a name that hasn't been on Billboard's charts in nearly 25 years: Kim Wilde. The singer is back on our charts with "Candy Crush," and that's spelled with a K, both words, which debuts at number 47 on the Dance Club Songs chart. It's her first chart ink since way back in January of 1994. When her cover of If I Can't Have You, which of course was a huge hit for Yvonne Elliman and it was written by the Bee Gees, wrapped up its run on the Dance Club Songs chart in, after earlier peaking at number 14. Coincidentally, it was this week in 1987 that Wilde topped the Hot 100 with her cover of You Keep Me Hanging On.
That's so, a jam.
Welcome back to the charts, Kim Wilde. Lastly, looking to next week on the charts, Kanye West is on track to score his 8th number one album on the Billboard 200 with Ye. It's just Ye, right?
Just Ye.
Industry forecasters suggest the 7-song album could bow with over 175,000 units earned in the week ending June 7th. Of course, that number could fluctuate wildly by the time you actually hear this podcast. It could be a little bit lower, could be even higher.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, don't put us on blast if he doesn't actually hit 175 exactly. I have to couch that so specifically.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Kanye's album is the second in a series of weekly album releases from his Good Music label, following Pusha T's Daytona, which debuts in the top 10 this week. Katie, speaking of K's and Kanye's and Candy Crushes.
And Kardashians.
how are folks reacting to the Kanye album? And what are the upcoming Good Music albums that are coming out in the next few weeks?
Well, I think that as is the par for the course with everything Kanye, it's a mixed bag of responses.
Mm.
I think his, you know, really dedicated followers are all in on Kanye and are really digging this and liking the very personal lyrics on it. He gets very deep about mental health in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people are appreciating that. There's some very interesting sounds on this that people are appreciating. On the other side, it is a short 23 minutes long.
Yeah, 7 songs.
7 tracks, 23 minutes. People are taking to Twitter and ranking all of his albums, and I've pretty much only seen Ye at the bottom of most of those lists. And you know what? That's talking about a pretty amazing catalog of work that he's put out, obviously.
Yeah.
So, you know, comparing him to himself is, you know, tricky work to begin with, and some people would argue his worst album is still better than a lot of other people.
Yeah, I would imagine that's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, it's really just, you know, a mixed result. And as you said, it started with Pusha T, which obviously a lot of the headlines are around his feud with Drake.
Yeah.
Starting with the song Infrared, which was on that album Daytona. But there are plenty more Good Music releases coming, including Friday, another one from Kanye with Kid Cudi. They have a little group they're calling Kids See Ghosts. So another album from Kanye coming in 1 week. As Keith and I were talking about earlier, Kanye could definitely replace himself at number one if he...
Yeah, he could, but now that he's, like, calling this not Kanye West, it's called...
So it's like Kids See Ghosts replace...
Yeah,
replaces.
Like, it's not quite the same thing as, like, when Future replaced himself, because I thought this was going to be, like, Kanye West, ampersand Kid Cudi. But evidently it's not. So it's kind of like the Huncho Jack Huncho thing.
Yeah.
Where it's like they purposely gave themselves a group name.
Yeah.
So it's like, you're sort of replacing your mouth, but you're not.
Yeah.
So maybe if Kanye hears this, he'll change it to Kanye West and Kid Cudi.
If you want that chart credit, Kanye, think
about
that.
If you want to have that magical feat of replacing yourself at number one.
And then after that, next week is Nas, which a lot of people are looking forward to, the team up of Kanye and Nas. And then Teyana Taylor, who people might know best from her dancing in Kanye's Fade video a couple years ago from the Pablo album. But she also is a great singer and has been an artist, but this is kind of her first Good Music look. People have been waiting for her debut on Good Music. So there could be more, even.
There could be more.
Yeah, Kanye said that there could be more. And, you know, when Kanye says something, he's already delivered this. People wondered if these back-to-back albums would come, and so far they've kept kept the schedule.
So far, the first two have materialized. So.
Indeed.
Hey.
So we'll see. But let's transition over to some of the biggest headlines on Billboard.com, shall we?
Okay.
So in honor of Pride Month, which kicked off on Friday, June 1st, Billboard Pride is once again posting a series of love letters to the LGBTQ community from some of your favorite pop stars. Now, I went back and looked at who wrote letters last year, and it's insane. Mm-hmm. Let's just talk about last year when we launched this initiative. We had love letters from Britney Spears, Barbara Streisand, Christina Aguilera, Celine Dion, Demi Lovato, Elton John, Jennifer Lopez, Kelly Clarkson, Liza Minnelli, Selena Gomez, and more. Like, that is just a, just the top, like, you know, eight or whatever. There's dozens of them.
I mean, you know, Barbara and Britney are great, but Liza?
I mean,
come on.
I know. When I was looking at the list, I had to mention Liza.
Wow.
And also, you know, it's making our Pride editor Patrick's job very difficult to find new letters this year because he pretty much got a serious selection last year.
But he's already done Patrick Crowley has done like a bang up job. He's our Pride editor and he's the one that's like sort of shepherding this whole thing.
And he already, like, you know, totally came in with a great first day. Ariana Grande wrote a love letter.
That's a nice look.
It was a good look. Friday, we published that letter. Ariana shared it on Twitter as well, so if you follow her, you might have seen it. Her letter talks about growing up with her gay brother, Frankie Grande, and wanting nothing more in her music career than to speak to the gay community with her songs. Hmm. She writes, "I am eternally indebted to and inspired by the LGBTQ community. I hope to create anthems for you that wrap you up with comfort and make you get your best life for as long as I live."
Get your best life.
Yes, thank you for celebrating me the way I celebrate you. You can read Ariana's full letter over on billboard.com/pride, where you can also find new letters from Imagine Dragons frontman Dan Reynolds, dance diva and Real Housewives of Beverly Hills star Erica Jane, and more. We're going to have a new one every single day. So keep checking.
Yeah, I feel like he's actually posted more than like one new one, maybe.
It's been one a day so far.
One a day. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I saw a bunch of
tweets. A Great Big World was Sunday.
Okay.
Yeah. So there'll be a new one tomorrow or Tuesday. You'll probably already know it at this point, but I'm, you know, being coy, there will be lots more letters.
Yeah, I've heard people, little birdies have told me
about some pretty good names.
So I mean, yeah,
go. Patrick doing the Lord's work.
There you go.
Another big kickoff to Pride Month was Taylor Swift's Reputation tour stop in Chicago on Saturday, where she took time before singing her latest single, Delicate, to salute her fans living their honest lives. She told her fans, "It's very brave to be vulnerable about your feelings in any situation, but it's even more brave to be honest about your feelings and who you love when you know that it might be met with adversity from society. This month and every month, I want to send my love and respect to everybody who has been brave enough to be honest about how they feel, to live their lives as they are, as they feel they should be, as they identify." This is a big deal, I think. Maybe it wasn't... Okay, it was done in Chicago. What if she had done this in one of her Southern tour stops? Where she's still got a lot of the country fans left over and a lot of people who are maybe not as open to this line of thinking as Taylor herself is.
Well, maybe this would just happen to be the first date that happened in June.
Yeah, so let's see if she continues to preach this message in Pride Month. But obviously, when you do it once
and you're done.
When you say something on stage, it then gets on the internet and everybody knows about it, right?
Yeah.
I thought it was a big moment.
No, I mean, considering that Taylor doesn't often make kind of sort of
Social or political statements.
And I think people can just, you don't have to think of this as a political statement. You can just think of it as a statement of just, you know, sort of embracing each other and, you know, love one another and try to, you know, understand one another a little mm-hmm. bit more, which shouldn't be viewed as a political thing.
Right.
But yeah, you know, I think it was also a very delicately worded statement. And I think it was a very well-worded statement because, you know, she knows that everything that she says, you know, could possibly be misinterpreted.
Sure.
So I think it was a very nice statement, and she didn't have to say anything.
No.
And, you know, that's... Thank you, Taylor.
So write us a love letter next for Billboard.com.
I think this probably works as her own love letter.
Okay, that's fair.
It's a love letter sent out to everyone.
Yes, the entire world.
Yes.
Just as a little follow-up note, for Billboard Pride coverage this month and beyond, make sure to follow our brand new at Billboard Pride accounts on Twitter and Instagram.
I follow them.
I do too.
Whole lot of pride going on.
There's so much pride.
So much pride.
And it's year round. Like Patrick kicked it off last Pride Month, so June 2017, and has been doing year round coverage since then. But obviously, it's a special month. Finally, the Tony Awards that we mentioned are this Sunday, June 10th, at New York's Radio City Music Hall. So we decided to call up our fellow Billboard podcast host, Rebecca Milzoff, who hosts the Billboard on Broadway podcast and writes about Broadway for Billboard.com, to chat all about the show. So let's get to our little conversation with Rebecca.
Just another plain street, Broadway, Broadway. Take a little time out to play where the joy of living holds sway all along Broadway.
Hey there, Rebecca. Welcome to the Pop Shop Podcast. How's it going?
It's going well. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Before we get into your predictions for the winners and all these categories, were there any big snubs for the Tonys this year in any of the musical categories?
Well, there are a few things that pop out. I think one of the biggest is that Jimmy Buffett's big Broadway foray, Escape to Margaritaville, was completely shut out. I would say many people would say that was for good reason, but I will, as a non-critic, I will keep my mouth shut on that, but that's conspicuously absent. There were also, I think, a lot fewer nominations for Frozen than everyone was expecting.
Yeah, it was like, what, three or something? Like, just three?
Yeah, it's three nominations, yeah. And I think that particularly the fact that there weren't acting category nominations for Casey Levy and Patty Murin, who play Elsa and Anna, was... you know, considered a snub because the two of them are great, I think.
Well, and we're reminded of the importance of the Tonys again because Margaritaville promptly closed after it got shut out of the Tony nominations, correct? It's announced it's closing?
Yeah, it's, I believe that's the case.
Yeah,
that's what I saw last week.
Yeah, they announced that it's closing. It hasn't actually shut the doors yet.
Right, right.
But I mean, it's never, usually you can count on the Tony Awards to give you a little bit of oomph if you're maybe on the teetering on the brink, and
or put the nail in the coffin if you're
Escape to Margaritaville. But on the bright side, they announced a national tour for Margaritaville.
Oh, Jimmy Buffett's going to be just fine.
Yeah,
yeah. No, I mean that's a show that had a lot of out of town productions that went well before it came to Broadway. It also has, I think, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, theaters on Broadway right now, which is, you know, for any show, tough to fill every night.
Maybe they should have rethought that before they booked that venue.
Hmm.
Well, anyway, so those are some big snubs. But let's get into who you think will actually win some of the awards. And by the way, listeners, Rebecca has seen all of the nominees for both Best Revival of a Musical and Best Musical, which is more than I can say for Katie and I, who have seen zero.
Yes, over here in Los Angeles, not so much.
Not so much.
Yes.
So
for the fall and the spring, I basically just set up a tent in Times Square and I don't leave.
Well, let's start with Best Revival of a Musical. The nominees are My Fair Lady, Once on This Island, and Rodgers and Hammerstein's Carousel. What, Rebecca, do you think will win this category?
Well, I have to apologize. This is a complicated answer because I actually think that revival of a musical is maybe one of the most exciting categories at the Tonys this year, which is not often the case.
Wow.
Usually the revival category will have maybe, you know, one standout show and a couple of shows that are there because they just happen to be the other revivals that happened that season. These three shows are definitely three of the best reviewed shows of the 2017-2018 season, and I really think any of them could walk away with the award and would be deserving. You have two big revivals, including, you know, Carousel has the boost of Scott Rudin, who is always a good sign at the Tonys if Scott Rudin is behind your show. And both, you know, really immaculately realized productions of really beloved Broadway scores with big stars. And, you know, I think either would be completely deserving. Once on This Island is a smaller show that, you know, has been completely reimagined from its original production. It has a real kind of Star is Born performance from Hayley Kilgore, who's nominated for Best Actress in a Musical. It's a really inventive production. It's just a total delight to see. So that would be kind of an underdog, but again, would be totally deserving if it gets the award. My personal vote would be for My Fair Lady. I was totally blown away by the production. Lauren Ambrose, who a lot of people know from 6 Feet Under, not particularly for singing, plays Eliza Doolittle, and she really is bringing a super individual interpretation of Eliza that I think feels very progressive, and I think that there's a little subtle twist to the show that I don't want to give away, but that makes it feel very modern and without sort of changing the essence of the show. So that's what I would go for, but I love all three of them.
Well, that I'm intrigued. I want to totally see that now. So that sounds amazing. And let's move over to the Best Musical category now, which is for new musicals making their Broadway debut. The nominees are The Band's Visit, Frozen, Mean Girls, and SpongeBob SquarePants the Musical. So who do you think will win this one?
Well, I wanted to start by saying that this is a really interesting year for original musical nominations because there just weren't that many new original musicals this year. I was comparing the list of shows that debuted in the 2016-2017 season versus this season, and it's literally twice as many shows last year than this year. So there weren't that many shows to compete.
I want to ask you a question, Rebecca. How many musicals were actually eligible for the best new or the best musical category this year? Was it kind of like you had a 1 in 2 chance of being nominated? Is it that slim?
Yeah, by my count, using my favorite source, the Internet Broadway Database, which is always right. there were 6 new musicals that were not revivals this year.
Wow.
Whereas there were, I think, actually 12 the year before.
So 4 out of the 6 new musicals got nominations. So if you weren't nominated, mm-hmm. Did I get it wrong, Katie?
No, that's crazy.
Katie just put her hand over her mouth. I'm like, did I get it wrong?
It's just crazy.
So yeah, it's almost like the daytime soap awards or something. It's like, well, you know, Young and the Restless is going to get nominated for best soap. I mean, wow.
Well, I will say that the 4 shows that were nominated, I think, were all really fun shows and totally deserve it. And
we're not dismissing them, people. Don't worry, we're not dismissing them.
Yes. No, but this is also a very different year from the past couple of years because it's not a year when there was one show that was kind of stealing all of the thunder. Last year it was Dear Evan Hansen, and the year before it was Hamilton. And I wouldn't say that there's one complete runaway success like that this year, which makes, you know, the night of the Tonys a little bit more exciting. You know, it's hard not to see this category as the three Goliaths over one little David. You know, you have three very big musicals with corporate backing of different kinds who I think all do a really you know, admirable job of turning something that was pre-existent into stage material and making it really lively. Obviously, you know, Mean Girls and SpongeBob are tied for the most nominations this year. I think it's 12, which is crazy. Very different shows, but both definitely like giant production kind of things. But My Favorite Show, which has been my favorite show since the fall and honestly since even a year before that when it was off-Broadway is The Band's Visit. And I think that there is a good chance that it could win the sort of bigger overall awards like Best Musical. It's a very unusual show for Broadway. It's small. It's kind of quiet. This is not a show with, like, big dance numbers. It is based on an Israeli movie that I think most people haven't seen. But it's a really beautiful story with an incredible original score by David Yazbek, who is a kind of longtime Broadway veteran who is pretty beloved in the community. It has star performances from Tony Shalhoub and from Katrina Link, both of whom are nominated for good reason. It's the kind of show that people walk out of and they just kind of feel generally bowled over. And I think it has gotten probably the best reviews of any show this past season. So I would be rooting for that one.
And it's, you know, the one that would venture to gain the most from getting that win as well, as far as getting the publicity.
Completely.
Yeah.
Is this sort of a case of, you know, this kind of reminds me of the year that Avenue Q ended up winning over Wicked, where you have kind of like a little underdog, you know, like, remember how it made you feel type show that triumphs over like a big commercial thing. Is that kind of what might be going on this year?
I think completely. I mean, The Band's Visit is a show where it just feels like all of the elements come together, the music, the acting, the set, the, like, even just the sort of movement on stage to create, like, an overall show that just feels like something really new. I would say that, you know, Frozen and Mean Girls and SpongeBob, they all have award-worthy elements, and obviously they're enjoyable as shows overall, but I personally see those shows walking off with some of the more individual awards. For instance, I think that there's a good chance that Tina Fey will win Best Book of a Musical for Mean Girls. SpongeBob is certainly one of the most visually inventive shows I've ever seen, that they certainly deserve the set design award. So I can see those shows getting, you know, picking up some individual awards, but that would be on The Band's Visit to win Best Musical and maybe Best Original Score as well.
Well, last thing, and thank you for your expert opinions on the two categories that we asked you about. Last thing, what is like the one thing that you're looking forward to seeing on the show? It could be a performance. It could be maybe someone that you're personally rooting for to win. It could be the hosts, which is Josh Groban and Sarah Bareilles for the first time they're hosting the Tonys. What's like one thing that you're really looking out for on the show?
I am very excited about Sarah Bareilles and Josh Groban hosting. I think that especially coming off last year when Kevin Spacey was perhaps not a slam dunk.
Oh, that's right. Kevin Spacey.
Remember
him?
Yeah. So, yeah, it feels a little icky. But I think that Sarah and Josh are a really smart choice. I mean, the two of them, I've interviewed both of them before. They're smart. They're engaging. I think they actually are friendly in real life. I would expect them to have a really great rapport on stage. And they're both people who are sort of ostensibly from outside the Broadway community but have been very accepted by the world of Broadway. I mean, Sarah Bareilles' Waitress, I think, is kind of becoming a modern classic in its way. And Josh, obviously, when he was in Natasha Pierre and The Great Comet of 1812 last year, was nominated and very well received. And they're two of my favorite people on social media, too. So I'm expecting some fun things from the two of them on stage for sure.
Definitely. Well, this has been awesome. Thank you so much for chatting with us, Rebecca. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, and I will be at the Tonys by myself. I'll be there on Sunday, so I'll be on the lookout and hopefully reporting some fun things that we don't see on screen.
Are you going to be in the audience, or are you lingering backstage somewhere in a press area?
I'll be in an actual chair.
Nice.
I don't know where in Radio City Music Hall it will be, but I will be in a seat watching from afar.
Fantastic.
Incredible. Well, then we will look out for your coverage on billboard.com.
Thanks, Rebecca.
Yay. And I won't quit till I'm a star.
I know we just said thanks to Rebecca on the phone call, but thank you so much to a fellow Billboard podcast host for joining us, and definitely check out both her podcast and all of her Tony's coverage from Inside the Room over on billboard.com.
And now it's time for the chart set of the week. This week in 1984, future Tony Award winner and current Tony nominee this year, Cyndi Lauper topped the Hot 100 with Time After Time. The track hit number one on the list dated June 9th, 1984 and spent a total of 2 weeks atop the list. It was her first of two number ones on the Hot 100 and her second straight top 10 hit following her debut with Girls Just Want to Have Fun. Somewhat surprisingly, that monster hit did not go to number one. It peaked at number two for 2 weeks, stuck behind Van Halen's only number one, Jump. Mm. So you can kind of let it slide.
I guess. Good for them. They got their number one.
And she got one with Time After Time.
But we can share the wealth.
Yeah, fine. Well, Time After Time would later earn a Grammy Award nomination for Song of the Year, while Girls nabbed a nomination for Record of the Year. Both lost those categories, though. But Lauper herself won the Grammy for Best New Artist. Lauper also later won an Emmy Award for Outstanding Guest Actress in a Comedy Series for Mad About You, and a Tony Award for Best Original Music Score for Kinky Boots, which means she's just one away from the EGOT. All she needs is an Oscar.
So it's time to make the Kinky Boots musical movie.
Right.
And then there she is.
Right.
She'll write an original song for it.
Yeah. And she can get a Best Original Song nomination.
There it is.
I mean, that is how she won her second Grammy. She was only won two Grammys, unbelievably, for Best New Artist, and then she won another Grammy for Best Musical Cast Album for Kinky Boots.
There you go.
So just keep that Kinky Boots train a rolling and take it to the big screen. Again, because it was originally a movie.
It's kind of like Hairspray. Hairspray started as a movie, went to Broadway, then came back as the Hairspray musical movie.
Yes.
Yeah, so totally there's precedent for it.
Anything's possible.
Indeed.
Fun fact, Time After Time became a top 10 hit on the Hot 100 again in 1998 when... Is it I-N-O-J or I-N-O-J?
I've heard you say I-N-O-J before, but I don't know the answer to that.
You know, I think I should have known this before I started talking. Well, it's just four capital letters, I-N-O-J. This act remade the track in 1998, and it peaked at number six on the chart. And it's kind of like...
I remember this song. Or
you
this
do?
Cover. Oh, yes.
There's a beat. They add a beat to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it still has almost the same tempo.
Mm-hmm.
Like... They didn't like. She's not singing suddenly like "If you fall, I will catch you." I mean, it's not like, you know, disco.
Yeah,
but it's like there's a beat to it, sort of like a mid to late '90s rhythmic dance beat.
Cyndi Lauper also had a big moment in the '90s with the Romeo and Michelle's high school reunion scene.
Ooh, okay.
I don't know if that was True Colors or Time After Time, but there's an incredible dance sequence at the very end of that. To Cyndi.
Oh, and they're dancing to a
Cyndi
Lauper song.
They do like a full... I'm pretty positive it's Time After Time. It's Romy and Michelle, played by Lisa Kudrow and Mira Sorvino. And they're dancing with, I think, is it Alan Cumming who plays the guy in that movie? Yeah.
Sure.
So good.
This is where I'm actually Googling this now. Katie might be faster with her typing. Well, so there you have it as Katie looks this up, because now I want to get this right before we close
this. It's definitely Time After Time.
Damn it, they dance a Time After
and
Time.
And it's definitely Alan Cumming.
Wow.
So.
There you go.
Yes.
So
please check that scene out on YouTube.
So there you have it. This week in 1984, Cyndi Lauper hit number one on the Hot 100 with Time After Time. Time After Time. Time.
It just matches the interpretive dance of Romy and Michelle so perfectly.
Okay, so that's the end of our show.
Oh.
I guess we could hang out and just not do the rest of our
work. I mean, we will hang out when we go back to our office that we share.
True.
We'll continue to hang out.
We will continue hanging
you
out.
You just can't join us.
What song should we go out on? Something musical themed?
Ooh.
Oh, golly.
That, you know what that made me think of? Like... was One Night in Bangkok, because I was thinking of Chess and ABBA.
Sure, we can play Murray Head's One Night in Bangkok, which was a big Hot 100 hit, and it's from the musical Chess.
It fits the theme.
Yeah. See you guys next time.
Bye.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.